The death toll from Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip rises to 67. 17 children and 6 women are among the victims. The Israeli army says Palestinians have fired around 1,500 rockets towards Israel since Monday evening. And the Palestinian president condemns the Israeli aggression against Palestinians, vowing to do everything possible to defend their rights. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, the death toll from Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip reaches at least 67 as tensions run sky high between the two sides. 17 children and 6 women have been killed in the regime's raids since Monday. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has retaliated by hitting Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv. The Israeli army says the group has fired around 1,500 rockets towards Israel. A fresh round of rocket barrage has caused the sirens to go off in northern Israel for the first time and prompted officials to divert flights from Ben Gurion Airport. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says airstrikes against the Gaza Strip are just the beginning. Israel's Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz also pledged more attacks on Gaza to bring what he called total long-term quiet before any truce. Meanwhile, Palestinian officials have condemned Israel's aggression.
The failure of Israel's plan in Jerusalem in the face of our people's steadfastness has pushed into a bloody aggression against the Gaza Strip. Israel is the aggressor and the occupying power that commits crimes against our people, and it bears full responsibility for that and for violating international law and international humanitarian law.
The Palestinian president also slammed Tel Aviv, saying Israel's continued aggression against Palestinians shows the regime has no regard for international norms and conventions. Mahmoud Abbas added that the Palestinian Authority will do all it can to defend the people. He stressed that Palestinians will also do all they can to stop the Israeli occupation and the regime's settlers from desecrating holy sites. Abbas said Jerusalem al-Quds is a red line and the eternal capital of Palestine, and that there will be no peace or stability until it is liberated.
The tensions have escalated in the Gaza Strip as different residential towers were hit by the Israeli airstrikes, causing further casualties. Hamas fired hundreds of rockets toward Israel following Israeli airstrikes that destroyed residential areas in several parts of the Gaza City. So far, tens of Palestinians have been killed and many others injured in Israeli raids since the beginning of the escalation on Monday.
Israel keeps targeting Gaza Strip. Since early hours of Wednesday, Israeli airstrikes hit dozens of residential buildings, raising the death toll of civilians. This shows that Israel is not after ceasefire.
Earlier, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, in a live speech, said the Palestinian resistance groups would defend Jerusalem al-Quds. He added the Israeli regime must be held accountable for the latest escalation because of its actions in Jerusalem al-Quds.
Palestinian resistance groups consider the Israeli regime as the main responsible for the current escalation and what is happening in Jerusalem al-Quds. The resistance groups will keep standing against the Israeli crimes.
The escalation was sparked by Israeli attack against Palestinian worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque compound on Monday and the recent eviction plans of Sheikh Jarrah Neighborhood in East Jerusalem al-Quds.
Israeli regime is targeting civilians because it's unable to hit the resistance men. We are proud of the resistance group's capabilities. The Israeli regime says it won't stop its aggression until we pay a heavy price by losing our women and children. Where is the international community to stop these violations?
The escalation came as Palestinians were preparing to celebrate Eid al-Fitr, but the ongoing Israeli raids over the Strip stand as a barrier in front of holding any celebrations in Gaza.
People here say that the killing of Palestinians won't go in vain.
They also called on the international community to make actions and stop this Israeli aggression against Palestinians. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Frank Emsbach is Emeritus Professor at the University of Wisconsin, joining us out of Madison. Frank, welcome. Israel has been demolishing, is continuing to demolish Palestinian high-rise buildings and other residential areas in the besieged of the Gaza Strip. I mean, Israel's desire to end the battle, as it usually wishes to in such a method, will it work considering when we see the response from the Palestinian resistance?
Well, I don't know whether it'll work, but let's go back to the first principle here. Starting about 6 or 8 weeks ago, Israel started an escalation of tension in the country by barring not only Muslims but Christians from holy sites in Jerusalem. Not only Israeli citizens, but also the citizens of Jerusalem. So that was one step, and that was the excuse to attack worshippers on Monday. The second thing has been an accelerated effort to evict Palestinians from the holy city. So you have an aggressive action here. And why is this happening now? Because Netanyahu is trying to become or stay prime minister. And this has been his technique all the time. And you have a situation where really he's saying, I'm going to really kill these people. And Benny Gantz is saying, well, I'm going to really kill them too. And so I'm better at this. Because Netanyahu needs to get one of these ultra-right parties to join his coalition, or else he's not going to be premier. And as of last week, they weren't going to do it. So this is partially an electoral strategy here, and hence extraordinarily dangerous. Secondly, people talk about the international community. The international community in this instance is the United States. Is the United States, will the Biden administration take a look, a serious look at what's happening in Israel and say enough is enough? You have to, with this acceleration of the settlements, it's unacceptable. The barring of people from Jerusalem is unacceptable. It's a violation of all the treaties. We are not going to support this, we meaning the United States. I think unless those types of things happen, unless the United States changes in some significant way its position, then we're going to be in for a terrible, terrible few months, because there is essentially no way out except an honest settlement and the end of the kind of aggression that Israel has visited upon the Palestinians. There's no way out. This can't keep going on. Every 6 months, every 2 years, the Israeli Air Force, one of the most powerful in the world, goes after a country that doesn't have an Air Force. I mean, really, and you're killing thousands of people over these many years. So 200 or 100 or 50 yesterday, it's going to escalate. So it's only the United States, really, that can put a stop to this by talking to Israel. The Palestinians, of course, are in a certain sense like the Vietnamese. The Vietnamese didn't have an air force either, and they won. And I think down the road, what you're going to see here, if this continues, is a coming together in the Middle East. For the first time, the Arab states that had made arrangements with Israel were forced yesterday to say, this is unacceptable. So we're seeing increasing instability, basically by Netanyahu in seeking the premiership. And that, I think, is the driver here this time.
Right, well, we've seen over the past few hours that the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has condemned the Palestinian response, saying nothing about Israel. And as you say, the Netanyahu, who's facing multiple issues back home, corruption and trying to get re-elected for the fourth or fifth time.
This is the problem. I think progressive people in the United States are going to have to insist on a change in American foreign policy. When Biden announced his team, it was pretty clear that it was pretty much the same team as under Obama or Bush, for that matter. And in terms of the Middle East, that meant there would be no change. So there has to be pressure, I think, from within this country to force a change in our policy.
Well, let's just say that change is not going to happen, Frank. Just getting back to the battle itself and the latest developments, we know this started from, as you say, four weeks ago with the Israeli very heavy, harsh crackdown on Palestinian peaceful worshippers trying to pray in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. But just getting back to the battle, do you think Israel was caught off guard with the response by the Palestinian resistance, with it responding on to a wider response and attacking strategic cities and sites in Israel and its infrastructure as well.
Well, clearly there's an escalation of the abilities of the Palestinians to challenge Israel. But there's more than just these rocket attacks. I think what's equally significant have been demonstrations in many, many Israeli cities. And I think this is the first time we've seen that. And I think that's even more significant, perhaps, in the military aspect of this current escalation.
Frank, thank you very much indeed for your time there. Frank Emsbach, Emeritus Professor, the University of Wisconsin, joining us out of Madison. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian protesters across the West Bank amid escalating tensions in the occupied territories. In Ramallah, Israeli troops fired tear gas to disperse the Palestinian protesters who hurled rocks and started fires. One Palestinian was killed in the scuffles there. Similar attacks happened in Nablus and several other cities across the occupied land. A Palestinian man was killed in South Nablus after he reportedly opened fire at Israeli forces. That raised the number of Palestinians killed in the occupied West Bank to at least five. In another incident, Israeli settlers attacked a Palestinian driver in a Tel Aviv suburb and severely beat him. The unrest comes as Israel is pushing ahead with a heavy-handed crackdown on Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, who gave us an update on the ongoing violence in the occupied West Bank.
In Yaffa, Israeli settlers attacked and smashed the stores owned by Palestinian Arabs there. They also attacked the vehicles. In one of the areas near Yaffa, Israeli settlers stopped a vehicle where a Palestinian driver was driving his car. They pulled him out from his vehicle and severely beaten him. Israeli forces killed a Palestinian at the road of Tel village, South Nablus, in northern the occupied West Bank. The Israeli army said that a Palestinian was driving his vehicle. He reached an Israeli military checkpoint, northern the occupied West Bank, and they claimed that he opened fire at the soldiers there, wounding two. At the spot, the Israeli forces opened fire back and killed him. Clashes have been taking place in the evening hours in several areas of the occupied West Bank. Protests had taken place in Tul Karim, in Al Khalil, also in Qalqilia. In Al Khalil, while the Palestinians had taken part in a protest to support the Gaza Strip and to slam the Israeli airstrikes on the besieged enclave, 16 Palestinians were wounded. In Hawara, in Nablus, also two Palestinians were wounded. In Jerusalem al-Quds, in the areas around the old town of Jerusalem al-Quds.
Syrians have held a protest rally in the capital Damascus in solidarity with Palestinians amid Israel's brutal attacks on the besieged at the Gaza Strip. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans against the Israeli regime. They also waved Syrian and Palestinian flags to express their support for the people of Gaza. Meanwhile, people took to the streets in the Lebanese capital Beirut to pledge support for Palestinians. Also, in South Africa, people held protests across the country to condemn their government's slow action in boycotting Israel for the regime's ongoing assault on Palestinians. A similar protest was held in the Austrian capital, Vienna, with thousands of people rallying in support of Palestinians in the occupied territories suffering from Israeli aggression.
Up to 3,000 people take to the streets in Vienna following the recent escalation of Israeli violence against Palestinians.
Demonstrators are expressing solidarity with their brothers and sisters in Palestine. They say they're condemning the excessive use of force by Israel against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Enough is enough, they say.
The Palestinian Solidarity Movement of Austria called on the government to put pressure on Israel to stop the atrocities.
We are all Sheikh Jarrah. This is one of our slogans. And we are against the ethnic cleansing, which Israel is doing now and has been doing for years and decades. All Israel is built on ethnic cleansing. And we support the Palestinian cause. And we are also here to make pressure to our government to do the same, or at least to stop their systematic support for Israel.
Activists called for a global movement to boycott Israel as an apartheid regime. Palestinian demonstrators said the world should recognize their right to return to their homeland.
We have a lot of young people from the Muslim community, Arabic community, and the Palestinian community. It's a message, a big message for the world and for the Israel regime that we never forget Palestine. We must return back to Palestine because this is our right.
The message from demonstrators here was that governments cannot be trusted to help, so public pressure is the only way forward. Homolezki, Vienna.
Colombians have marched in anti-government protests across the country as President Iván Duque urged the citizens to reject violence. Union members, students, pensioners and workers attended the demonstrations. The sometimes deadly rallies were initially fueled in late April by outrage at a now cancelled tax plan, but protesters' demands have expanded to include an end to police violence, economic support as the COVID-19 pandemic batters incomes, and the withdrawal of a health reform. It is reported that more than 40 civilians have lost their lives during the protests. One police officer was also killed. That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. U.S. President Joe Biden said on Monday, 10th of May, that the United States would disrupt and prosecute a criminal gang of hackers called DarkSide, which the FBI formerly blamed for the huge ransomware attack that has disrupted the flow of nearly half of the gasoline and jet fuel supplies to the east coast of the United States. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists David Sanger and Nicole Perroff. The piece is titled, FBI Identifies Group Behind Pipeline Hack. U.S. President Joe Biden said on Monday, 10th of May, that the United States would disrupt and prosecute a criminal gang of hackers called DarkSide, which the FBI formerly blamed for a huge ransomware attack that has disrupted the flow of nearly half of the gasoline and jet fuel supplies to the east coast of the United States. The FBI clearly concerned that the ransomware effort could spread, issued an emergency alert to electric utilities, gas suppliers, and other pipeline operators to be on the lookout for code like the kind that locked up Colonial Pipelines, a private firm that controls the major pipeline carrying gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel from the Texas Gulf Coast to the New York Harbor. The pipeline remained offline for a fourth day on Monday, 10th of May, as a preemptive measure to keep the malware that infected the company's computer networks from spreading to the control systems that run the pipeline. So far, the effects on gasoline and other energy supplies seem minimal, and Colonial said it hoped to have the pipeline running again by the end of this week. The cyber attack prompted emergency meetings at the White House all through the weekend as officials tried to understand whether the episode was purely a criminal act intended to lock up Colonial's computer networks unless it paid a large ransom, or was the work of Russia or another state that was using the criminal group covertly. So far, intelligence officials said all the indications are that it was simply an act of extortion by the group, which first began to deploy such ransomware last August and is believed to operate from Eastern Europe and possibly from Russia. There was some evidence, even in the group's own statements on Monday, that suggested the group had intended to simply extort money from the company and was surprised that it ended up cutting off the main gasoline and jet fuel supplies to the eastern seaboard of the United States. The cyber attack exposed the remarkable vulnerability of a key conduit for energy in the United States, as hackers become more brazen in taking on critical infrastructure like electrical grids, pipelines, hospitals, and water treatment facilities. The city governments of Atlanta, Georgia, and New Orleans, and in recent weeks, the Washington, D.C. Police Department have also been hit. The explosion of ransomware cases has been fueled by the rise of cyber insurance, which has made many companies and governments ripe targets for criminal gangs that believe their targets will pay, and of cryptocurrencies, which make extortion payments harder to trace. In this case, the ransomware was not directed at the control systems of the pipeline, federal officials and private investigators have said, but rather the back-office operations of Colonial Pipeline. Nonetheless, the fear of greater damage forced the company to shut down the system altogether, a move that drove home the huge vulnerabilities in the patched-together network that keeps gas stations, truck stops, and airports running, particularly in the east coast of the United States. A preliminary investigation showed poor security practices at Colonial Pipeline, according to federal and private officials familiar with the inquiry. The lapses, they said, most likely made the act of breaking into and locking up the company's systems fairly easy. Colonial Pipeline has not answered questions about what kind of investment it had made in protecting its computer networks, and refused to say whether it was paying the ransom. And the company appeared reluctant to let federal officials bolster its defenses. Right now, they've not asked for cyber support from the federal government. Anne Neuberger, the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emergency Technology, told reporters at a briefing at the White House. Anne Neuberger declined to say whether the federal government would advise paying the ransom, noting that companies are often in a difficult position if their data is encrypted and they do not have backups and cannot recover the data. While Ms. Neuberger did not say so, that appears to be essentially what happened to Colonial Pipeline. President Joe Biden, who is expected to announce an executive order in the coming days to strengthen America's cyber defenses, said there was no evidence that the Russian government was behind the attack. But he said he planned to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin soon. The two men are expected to hold their first summit next month, and he suggested Moscow bore some responsibility because DarkSide is believed to have roots in Russia, and the country provides a haven for cyber criminals. There are governments that turn a blind eye or affirmatively encourage these groups, and Russia is one of those countries, said Christopher Painter, the United States' former top cyber diplomat. Christopher Painter added, "Putting pressure on safe havens for these criminals has to be part of any solution." Colonial Pipelines feed large storage tanks up and down the east coast of the United States, and supplies seem plentiful, in part because of reduced traffic during the coronavirus pandemic. Colonial Pipelines issued a statement on Monday saying its goal was to substantially resume service by the end of this week, but the company cautioned that the process would take time. Elizabeth Sherwood Randall, Joe Biden's Homeland Security Advisor and a former Deputy Secretary of Energy in the Obama administration, said that the Energy Department was leading the federal response and had convened an oil and natural gas and electric sector utility partners to share details about the ransomware attack and discuss recommended measures to mitigate further incidents across the industry. Elizabeth Sherwood Randall noted that the federal government had relaxed rules for drivers who transport gasoline and jet fuel by truck in an effort to alleviate the effects. "Right now, there is not a supply shortage," she said. "We are preparing for multiple possible contingencies." But, Sherwood Randall said, the job of getting the pipeline back online belonged to Colonial Pipelines. To many officials who have struggled for years to protect the United States' critical infrastructure from cyber attacks, the only surprise about the events of the past few days is that they took so long to happen.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is my absolute honor and pleasure to be with you guys today. And of course, with my wonderful friend and sister, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's really an honor for me to be here.
So today we're going to continue talking about nutrients and special foods, fruits, vegetables that parents can take before the pregnancy in order to prepare their bodies for the growth and development of their child. Now, we talked about vegetables, we talked about fruit, we talked about certain drinks and beverages, certain soups, most of which were, I think, aside from the vegetables and the fruits, were traditional Iranian cooking. And the fruits and vegetables, I think we can get anywhere. If rooty vegetables, like you mentioned, the carrots and the turnips and the beetroots with their leaves, sweet potatoes, Indian potatoes, celeries, and fruits you mentioned, berries, lots and lots of berries, pomegranates, raisins, any type of grapes that you can stuff into your mouth, and any of the products of grapes, whether it's the grape juice, whether it's, well, natural grape juice, I mean, preferably. Verjuice, raisins, vinegar. And stuff like that.
Vinegar
is good. It's really important, however, that we're discussing these pre-pregnancy preps, but you guys still have to consult with your doctor, your specialist, or whatever. Some of these foods shouldn't be consumed if you have underlying conditions, if you've got stomach ulcer, blood pressure problems, fatty liver, not fatty liver, thyroid problems, kidney problems, I don't know, what have you. But make sure to check it out first. I mean, these are all general tips. If you want to apply to it to yourself personally, you got to make sure it personally applies to you.
Yeah, especially vinegar. If pregnant women use vinegar, it's not good for them. Mm. Also, people with ulcers should not be using vinegar.
Exactly. Even honey. A lot of people don't know that honey really hurts stomach ulcer, though we have so many ahadith that tells us about how it's the cure for 70 illnesses. Apparently, stomach ulcer wasn't one of it. So what are we going to be talking about today?
Okay, so we have some more nutritious facts that we want to add, and then I think by the end of this session we will be finishing talking about them, and then we can go to some points about your purification of the soul.
Perfect.
Red sugar. Mm-hmm. Is
that different from brown sugar?
I don't know what's the difference between brown sugar and red sugar. But I found that in one source that red sugar was absolutely effective in detoxing the body. And if you consume 1 teaspoon of red sugar in the morning, mm-hmm. and 1 teaspoon of red sugar at night, it would be fabulous for cleansing your body of the toxins that exist in your body. While you're checking, one more food or one more source of nutrient that is super healthy for detoxing the body is bran. And I remember my sister adding 1 spoon of bran, mm-hmm. wheat bran or barley bran or any kind of rice bran, to your soup when you're making soup.
Oh, yes.
To thicken your soup.
Exactly.
Instead of adding just white flour, it would be like, even in the ash that you're making, in the different ash that we mentioned with the verjuice, if you do add 1 spoon of bran to it, it would be super healthy. So if any kind of food that you're making, add 1 spoon of bran to it. Mm. Also, a very good cure for constipation is to brew bran, mm-hmm. and to use it. How? You take 100 grams of bran, you mix it, you add 1 cup of boiling water to it, and you let it brew. You keep this in your refrigerator, and every single morning, when you are still hungry, without having started your day and your breakfast, prior to breakfast, you drink one spoon of this mixture. This is a fabulous remedy for constipation.
Interesting. Yeah. Right. And basically, we really need to, if you're constipated, you need to sort it out, because it means that all those toxins and poisons
are
and
inside.
Things that not do not have to be there. They're actually harmful for your body are all piled up at the bottom of your abdomen, and you need to flush it out literally as soon as you can. I read up about sugar. Red sugar is actually brown sugar.
Really?
The Chinese refer to it as red sugar, and both of them are actually just raw sugar, and it's the minerals that haven't been refined that give it that brown color. But then there's actually another type of red sugar, which is really red in color, and that is just artificial color.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So make sure you just get brown sugar.
Great.
Basically.
Thank you very much for
my
all
pleasure.
This information. Also, I find like for having tea and coffee, instead of adding white sugar to it, just add red sugar or brown sugar or unrefined sugar, as you call it.
Raw sugar.
And one point when you're making cookies, if you add brown, if you replace red sugar or brown sugar with white sugar, it's going to make it, give it a very chewy, gooey taste.
Mm.
It's going to be good.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So brown sugar it is, guys, in your cookies and in your tea.
Exactly. One more traditional remedy for detoxing the body pre-pregnancy is, as they call it, duplicatory powder.
Okay, what's that?
It's basically lime with yellow arsenic. They add it together. Of course, I haven't made it myself. I usually buy it pre-made. It's a technique that has recently been used by many people. I know that is very effective. Instead of shaving, it's a kind of paste, powder that you turn it into paste, and you apply it to all your body. And traditional medicine doctors or practitioners prescribe this as a very good detoxin of your body. Yes.
But and it's from the outside, right?
Certainly. Yeah, just for you, you apply it to your skin. Mm-hmm. And of course, different skins, you have to get advice from your skin doctor to see if it's perfectly fine with you. Test it on your body, on your skin, to see if you're sensitive to it or not. And then after this, I remember that my grandma or grandparents would say that people who use duplicatory powder back in the old days when they had the public bath, they would do this process every single week in the public bath. And after that, they would apply henna.
Mm-hmm.
Henna powder that has been soaked on that body to make it very fresh, shiny, and
soft.
This is very good.
Traditional skin routines.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Instead of buying so many expensive skin products
and all those chemicals.
Yeah, it's super good. It's just, you just have to put it in your lifestyle, put it in your life routine.
But make sure you check it out first. Make sure you put it on a small part of your skin first so it doesn't burn it off and melt your bone, then you apply.
All these have very specific instructions
exactly.
to be followed and like the amount of time, like the degree of the water you add to the powder to make it into a paste, and then the time it has to stay on your skin. All these have, if you put it too long, it will take away one layer of your skin. So you have to be very careful. But these are natural detoxins, and according to hadith, to traditions from the Ahlul Bayt, we also have that this powder, this duplicatory powder, is very good for the skin and for the body, for detoxing it.
MashaAllah.
Yeah.
It seems like slowly we're moving outward. First, we were talking about things that we should consume and put inside our body. Now we're talking about things that we put on top of our skin.
Exactly. Again, we're going to go back to inside our bodies, to sources of iron, because a lot of women and girls have iron deficiency.
Yep.
Right. And so, and the first thing that the doctor does is to give pills, iron pills or
They're not necessarily effective, though.
Yeah.
I mean, half of these are just pharmaceuticals benefiting from that, from giving, like, placebo to people. Mm-hmm. And some of them are really hard to digest if you've got stomach problems already.
Exactly.
So
they will add up to the toxins of your body.
The chemicals.
These are minerals.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the safest way, maybe you can take those iron pills that fit you best and try to take those foods that are beneficial for your iron as well.
Yeah, but some people, some traditional doctors, traditional medicine experts actually say that it's better not to take any of these pills, iron mm-hmm. pills, and then take this the food, replace them with mm-hmm. the food supplies that are filled with iron. For instance, meat.
Absolutely, red meat.
Red meat, especially if it's lamb meat, camel meat. Mm-hmm. These are really good. Also, in some countries, you can find the liver of the lamb, or the heart or the kidney of the lamb. These are also filled in very good sources of iron. Then spinach. Mm-hmm. These days, a very popular kind of salad that you can find in many restaurants is spinach.
Young spinach
where,
salad.
Spinach salad where you can find the baby spinach. Mm-hmm. And when you have it raw, not cooked, it has more sources of iron. Of course, I'm not a nutritious expert, but I'm just sharing this information according to the mm-hmm. sources that I have read. Celery is also is a very good source of iron. Mm-hmm. Mushrooms.
Interesting.
I don't know. Are good sources of iron. Lettuce, turnips, carrots mm-hmm. are good sources of iron. Beetroots, berries, sunflower kernels. Uh-huh. Seed kernels.
Yum.
They're
perfect.
Filled with iron. You know, they're
and
good.
Vitamin B.
Exactly. So also plums. Remember that we had ashe alu bukhara, or alu bukhara, as they call it, the dried plum is alu bukhara. And it's a very good source, rich source of potassium and other minerals and other vitamins. And it's a high fiber. You get a high, dosage of fiber. Which, if you have constipation, again, it's a very, very good source. So you get your iron supplements, mm-hmm. your iron, the iron needs of your body, and then it eases you with the constipation that you have. Mm.
Something else that reminded me that's probably high in iron, you're probably going to mention at some point, too, pistachios.
I weren't going to mention
that. Yeah, okay, pistachios are high in iron. They're pretty expensive in most of the world. Everywhere, actually. I mean, Iran is the source of pistachio, and here, there, in Iran, pistachio is pretty expensive. But yeah, they're really high in iron.
There's one sweet that people in Isfahan province eat it a lot. It's called gaz,
mm-hmm.
right? And inside this gaz, which is filled with gaz angabin, which is a kind of herb mm-hmm. that is found, and then they mix it with some other stuff. So that's like the base of it, and they add a lot of pistachios mm-hmm. to it. So in the past, instead of having all these sweets with white sugar and flour, mm-hmm. they used to have like really nice tasty desserts, desserts with natural ingredients. So one very effective source of iron that I personally find very effective, and whenever I find that I'm lacking iron myself, I take this recipe, and it's super effective. I would love it. It's so easy. They call it the seshire, the three kinds of syrups, mm-hmm. right? What syrups? And some people actually make four kinds of syrups. So malberries, mm-hmm. malberry syrup, date syrup, grape syrup, and I don't know what's the fourth kind of syrup that they add. Anyways, these are filled with iron. Mm-hmm. You just add, you can have the syrup, you can add three of them in equal proportions, and add
water,
mix it, drink it like juice. And if you add a little bit of rose water to it, it's going to be
super. It's actually really sweet.
Yeah. But you add water to it
yeah.
to make it not sweet.
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, They're really naturally so sweet. You don't have to add any sugar, anything to it.
Exactly. And some people even like to take raisin syrup. Raisin syrup. Instead of grape syrup, they make the raisins and then they make a syrup out of the raisins.
Oh, wow.
So these are filled, rich with
minerals and iron.
Perfect.
Exactly. Thank you so very much, Sister Razi. And thank you to our listeners for being with us. I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return. La ilaha
The Quran. Given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The Biden administration gives lip service to a negotiated settlement, but Washington has done nothing at all to prevent the gradual colonization of the Palestinian West Bank, says Juan Kohlreiter in an article titled, "By Supporting Trump's Move of the U.S. Embassy to Al-Quds, Biden Enabled Israeli Ethnic Cleansing of Palestinians." Stay tuned for more. The Zionist regime has approved 450 housing units in Har Homa district in the east of Al-Quds. The planning of more and more squatter settlements on land owned by Palestinian families is among the actions that produced massive unrest in Al-Quds recently. In particular, the Israeli regime plan to make dozens of families homeless in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has raised tensions to a fever pitch. The Israeli regime pretends not to recognize the property titles of many families there and prevents them from making additions to their homes. When they do so anyway, the Israelis schedule them for demolition. This behavior is among the reasons that Human Rights Watch has just branded the fake regime of Israel as an apartheid regime. There were further Palestinian protests recently in Al-Quds as far-right wing groups, the Israeli equivalent of QAnon, planned to parade through Palestinian neighborhoods waving Israeli regime flags just to make it clear who is in control of people's lives there. Palestinians are not allowed to protest, and the Israeli commandos come in to break heads and throw stun grenades. For a Palestinian who wave a Palestinian flag, this is a crime that could result in long years in jail. This is what the U.S. press calls clashes and skirmishes, managing to avoid naming Israeli regime repression. Since the Israeli regime is unimpeded in building throughout the West Bank, 60% of which is under direct Israeli regime military occupation, and 40% of which is under indirect Israeli regime military occupation, no two-state solution has been plausible for at least a decade, and maybe more. Speaking of two states that can never materialize is just a way of, in Mitt Romney's words, kicking the can down the road. So the new construction in Palestinian East Al-Quds was denounced by Washington, but the denunciation is toothless. Netanyahu knows that it is toothless and engaged in one of his favorite sports, owning the libs in Washington. Al-Quds, he said, is not a settlement, it is the capital of Israel, he claimed. The Biden administration says that the ultimate disposition of East Al-Quds is a matter for final status negotiations between Israel and Palestinians. But Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken don't have a leg to stand on in rejecting Netanyahu's position, since they decided to ratify the decision of the odious Trump to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. Only a handful of countries has agreed to recognize undivided Al-Quds as the Israeli regime's capital, a recognition that forestalls final stall negotiations. Trump symbolically acquiesced in Netanyahu's claims. Biden, let the symbolism stand. Although Israelis often attempt to use the 1947 UN General Assembly partition plan as a charter of legitimacy, it isn't. It was never ratified by the UN executive branch, which is the Security Council, and so has no force of law. Moreover, Israeli regime leaders such as Ben-Gurion only paid lip service to it, ignoring it when they could seize Fatah territory by main force. But even that very pro-Zionist 1947 plan did not award Al-Quds to Israeli regime, the city given its importance to Jews, Christians and Muslims, was to be under an international regime. But in 1948 war, the Zionist regime captured the west of the city, while Jordanian troops held the east. The Israelis annexed East Al-Quds and other Palestinian West Bank territory, which is an egregious violation of the United Nations Charter, which forbids the acquisition of territory by military force. The Zionist regime is a signatory. Then, the Zionist regime began flooding Israeli squatters onto Palestinian land in East Al-Quds. This transfer of population from the occupying power to militarily occupied territory is a severe violation of 1949 Geneva Convention on the Treatment of Occupied Populations. The Fourth Geneva Convention was aimed at preventing a repeat of Axis war crimes, as with the attempts of the Nazis to settle occupied Poland with ethnic Germans and to ethnically cleanse Poles from their own country to make way for Germanization. Today, 370,000 Palestinians live in East Al-Quds, and Israelis have managed to plant over 200,000 Israelis in squatter settlements on land owned by Palestinians. The goal of the Israeli regime, right, is to evict the Palestinians slowly and gradually so as to avoid a backlash from the rest of the world and to replace them with Israeli settlers so as to create a monochrome Israeli Al-Quds. Currently, the Palestinian neighborhoods in East Al-Quds and being turned into cantons surrounded by Israeli squatter settlements and sometimes cut off from other Palestinians, and they are all heavily surveilled and patrolled by Israeli regime forces. The Biden administration gives lip service to a negotiated settlement, but Washington has done nothing at all to prevent the gradual colonization of the Palestinian West Bank, including East Al-Quds, by Israelis over the past 54 years, and so we'll just go only sending over memos.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.